It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
Welcome back, boys and girls. It is the preseason podcast of the year. Jay Hicks is back with our very own special guest, our draft analyst for the NBA. That would be Mr. Mark Hicks. He is back once again, joining us on Sunday night, June the 23rd, just ahead of the 2024 NBA draft on Wednesday, I believe, is when it begins. I think it's a two-night affair, if I'm not mistaken, for the first time. So that should be something. But we're here to talk about it. We're here to talk about who your team that's picking in the lottery ought to take with their draft pick. And there's no better GM in the world that I'd rather have than Mr. Mark Hicks. How you feeling tonight, cousin?
I'm doing great, cuz. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, it should be noted that Mark has just relocated his family. They've moved from Texas back to Ohio. I think a sound decision. I think anybody could reasonably say, you know what I mean? I mean, there's some advantages to living in Texas, but then there's also a lot of Texas being Texas. And so happy to have Mark back in Ohio. You know what I'm saying? So welcome back this time in Columbus. Right. But
yes, sir.
Hopefully you're getting situated now.
Oh yeah. We're finally getting situated. We're just trying to find our forever home right now, but we're bouncing from hotel to hotel. But other than that, man, it's great to be back in the state of Ohio. It's just where we need to be right now. So I'm happy, and everybody else is happy.
Hey, man, listen, you're not the only one that's still trying to find your forever home. And with the market the way that it is right now, I don't know that anybody's going to be finding it anytime soon. So,
ain't lying.
You know, prayers out to you guys, and hopefully you return the favor. But yeah, no doubt. Now, before we get down to business, of course, the website is hiphopsportsreport.com. Please hit up the website, peruse around, see what you like, see what you don't like. Here's a quick hint. You're not going to find anything that you don't like because it's dope. All right. So just check out the website. Tell somebody to tell somebody about it. Like the podcast, rate the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, all that fun stuff. Appreciate y'all support. We have some housekeeping items to get to really quickly off the top before we get into the mock draft. First of all, rest in peace to three legends that we lost, I think, since the last time we've spoken. So, Mr. Bill Walton, Mr. Jerry West, and Mr. Willie Mays, three giants of the sports landscape that are no longer with us. So, rest in peace to Bill Walton, Jerry West, and the incomparable Willie Mays. I mean, these guys were all pretty much before my time, and yet I'm still awed by all of them. And so I wish I would have been able to see them in their day. But Hip Hop Sports Support wants to extend condolences to the families of those individuals and those that knew them and those who were affected by them. And I have a reason to believe that if you like basketball and football, basketball and baseball, you were affected by all three of those guys. So shout out to them, and may their legacy continue to endure. Also, we mentioned at the draft, I guess, is two nights now. So that's the first for this year.
Yes, sir.
There has not been a lot.
Thursday, I believe.
Yeah. Much maligned has been the 2024 NBA draft class. Is that fair to say, Mark? I mean, this is not.
Very, very fair.
Yeah. I mean, this is reminiscent of the 2013 draft. And.
Yes, sir.
The 2013 draft is one that will live on in infamy. The Cleveland Cavaliers had the first pick that year, and you said that the Cavs should pick Anthony Bennett number one, and they shocked the world and picked Anthony Bennett number one. And
yes,
I will stand here and defend that pick to this day. Not because I thought that they should have picked Anthony Bennett. I actually wanted Ben McLemore. But that underscores the point, right? That the draft was that bad.
Right.
There was no consensus number one pick that year, and the Cavs were trying like hell to trade that pick, and they couldn't do it. And so when people want to criticize them for taking Anthony Bennett, it's like, well, they took a swing. There was a draft with no clear-cut number one, and it wasn't a very good draft, and the star of the draft wasn't picked until like the 15th pick or whatever, and his name was Giannis Antetokounmpo, I believe, right?
Yep.
So there was no way to know that Giannis was going to be Giannis, And sometimes that's how drafts work. That's just how it goes sometimes. You don't have that star power at the top, but there still can be a legend in the making somewhere. And so hopefully a GM for your favorite team can find that. But I'm just saying that to say, you know, we've seen the Anthony Bennett type drafts before, and they don't always pan out so well. But I will always defend the Cavaliers for that selection for that reason. They tried to get rid of the pick, and nobody won it. And that just goes to prove the point. Shout out to the Boston Celtics real quick on capturing the 2024 NBA championship. I think I'm going to leave that there. I don't think anything else needs to be said. We had Boston in six. You know what I'm saying? Your boy did, but it was Boston in five. Whatever. I don't really care for the Celtics. They knocked out the Cavaliers. So I'm not really pumped about that, but it is what it is. So I guess we'll dive right into it, Mark. I don't want to belabor it any longer because we got a lot to get to. I just want to kick things off with the Atlanta Hawks, who have the number one pick. I believe this is the first time, Mark, that the Hawks have ever held the number one pick in the draft. And
I believe you're correct.
And what a year to get it when there's no consensus number one pick. So sucks to be y'all in the great city of Atlanta. But Mark, you're running the Hawks now. You're the general manager down there. Quinn Snyder's your coach. Your team just went 36-46, so not the worst team in the league by any stretch. You were the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference. I don't know what move you want to make with the roster. I mean, to me, you know, you have your cornerstone pieces, air quote, between Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. I'm of the belief that it's time to cut the cord on Trae Young. Not because I think he's a terrible player, but you have no chance of winning a championship if he's your best player. And I'm not sure if you can win a championship if he's your second best player. And Atlanta hasn't really done a lot to get to bring talent with him that's significantly an upgrade from Trae Young. In fact, they've really just been kind of trying to gear everything to Trae Young, try to enhance Trae Young and give him all the statistics and accolades they can get him, and it hasn't really panned out in terms of the win column, save for that one Eastern Conference Finals run. They still have DeAndre Hunter, who I feel like could be a really significant piece on a different team. You know, they have Okongwu. Right. Those are the recent lottery picks. They haven't really panned out to the extent that I think Atlanta would want. So, Mark, you have the number one pick. Lay it on us, man. Who should the Hawks take?
Well, see, when you have a situation like the Hawks do right now where they have the number one pick and there's no consensus number one, now you're just trying to, I guess, find a player that best suits the needs of your team. So right now, the Hawks' biggest need, besides just clear-cut talent on their roster, is they need some sort of defensive anchor. They need some type of on-ball defense. I think at the top of the draft, I don't think there's actually someone that they could actually get. So with the number one pick, you should get, in my opinion, you should get the best player or the one that you have the most upside. And I was going back and forth with a couple of people about, you know, if I was a GM, who would I take? Because there is no consensus. But everybody's pointing to this person as a potential reincarnation of Victor Wembanyama. I'm not a belief that this kid is that, but he is, I think out of all of these guys in this draft, he has the potential to be the most special. So I'm going to go with Alex Saar, the center from Australia, even though he plays unlike any center at 7'1", 225, but he can provide you a different look, almost like Porzingis to a certain degree offensively. And defensively at 7'1", he can be a help as a defensive anchor on defense for your team. He has the potential to do it. Now, whether or not he does it, that's up in the air, but that's what I would take. I would take Alex Saar because in a draft like this, you need a player with the most upside if you don't have a clear-cut number one player. So that's who I would take if I was the Atlanta Hawks.
So I like what you said about Saar because of the fact that, again, going back to the 2013 draft with Anthony Bennett, you believed that he was the guy with the most upside. In a draft void of a consensus top guy, you swing for the fence.
Yep.
And I love the fact that you, that's how you felt back then. had you been running the Cavaliers at the time and taking Anthony Bennett, they would have thrown you out on your ear for making that selection and whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't deter you from taking Alex Saar, hypothetically number one, 11 years later. I appreciate
hypothetically, that. Hypothetically, thank you for that, but I appreciate the fact that I would not have had Mike Brown as my coach for Anthony Bennett either. So that it may be a terrible pick. He may have never turned out, but I would never had Mike Brown trying to be the coach of a guy with a young of a talented player as Anthony Bennett was.
We don't need to go through and rehash the Anthony Bennett saga.
I really don't. But it still pains me to this day. 11 years later, it still bothers me, man. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. And Mike Brown's done some nice things since he left Cleveland and Los Angeles. So let's just put that out there. But Alex Saar, to me, I see a rim runner, a finisher. He runs the floor well. He's an elite shot blocker. He's a little thin, but that's okay. And this goes back to something that I've said before about draft prospects in the NBA. There's always the same three things that you used to hear about every prospect. You used to always hear that a guy needs to work on his jumper. You used to always hear that he needs to work on his defense and that he needs to put on some muscle and get in the weight room. Those are the three things you used to hear about every single prospect every year. And so that got to the point that it was annoying because it was like low-hanging fruit draft analysis. And I'm at the point now where, okay, we can amend that a little bit, because now if you can't shoot coming into the league, that's an issue. That's kind of the era that we're in now. Alex Saar cannot shoot, okay? So if you're going to draft him first overall, you're probably going to have to do so with the expectation that you're pairing him with another big that can space the floor. And I don't know if Atlanta really has that guy. In fact, I think Okongwu is kind of similar to Saar from at least a little similar in skill set. Maybe I'm a little off base with that, but I feel like he can, you know, rim run and block shots decently as well. He might not be as long as Alex Saar, but, you know, I think I wouldn't be mad at Atlanta for taking him there, but I think they would be kind of still in flux as an organization. It's kind of like, okay, now we got Alex Saar, now what do we do? It's not like it's a clear sense of direction like last year when the Spurs got Wemby, who everybody knew was going to be the next biggest thing, and he turned out to be even better than advertised.
I agree with you 1,000%. The one thing I like about Alex Saar, though, and I mean, it's not like I get to watch Australian basketball late nights. You know, YouTube.
I thought he was French. He's not French.
I think he's French descent, but he's from Australia. At least he played on an Australia team. So looking at some of his highlights and everything, is him, but his game, he has a jumper. He has the form to have a good jumper, and it's just not consistent. And some of the things, the skills that he have at 7'1", I can see where they get some of the Wemby comparison, but the biggest difference between the two of them is, you know, Wemby had his come to Jesus moment when he got to the league, and it took him a while to get acclimated to the NBA. It's going to be the same for Alex Saar, but Alex Saar, with the difference between the two of them is, Alex Saar is a little more aggressive than Wemby is. He attacks the rim a lot stronger than Wemby did when he first came into the league. And as Wemby got his niche, he started attacking more towards to the basket and doing those type of things. I don't think it's going to be that big of a leap for Alex Saar, because he's automatically aggressive as a basketball player. But I think overall, he's going to come through the same problems that Wemby has, because he's so big and he has guard or forward like skills, but in the center's body. So it's going to take him some time to get adjusted to the league. But I think his aggressiveness is going to be the helping hand to guiding him along and get him acclimated to the NBA.
I think Saar is barely scratching the surface as an offensive talent at this level. And so it's going to take a while. You know, Atlanta's going to have to show some patience here and some real development with him before he gets to where he wants to get to. I will say, though, if that they keep Trae Young will make him look good, because there are a few point guards in the league that are better at finding floor running bigs, throwing lobs and stuff like that than Trae Young. He's one of the best in the business at that. So there could be a natural pairing there that works well for Atlanta. Number two were the Washington Wizards, 15-67 last year. They fired Wes Unseld Jr., which I mean, he must have been bad because Wes Unseld Sr. is like one of the greatest players in franchise history. Yeah. You know what I mean? So like that, you know, that's like Bronny James being the coach of the Cavs and then getting the boot. Like that takes some courage. that takes some courage. And here's the funny thing. They hired a dude named Brian Keefe. I don't know the first thing about Mr. Brian Keefe. This is no shade to Brian Keefe. I remember not long ago, I was watching First Take, which I don't normally spend a ton of time watching First Take, but they caught me one day slipping. And they had Udonis Haslam on there, and they were debating the merits of the coaching vacancies in the NBA. At the time, it was the Lakers, Cavs, and the Wizards. And our boy, you, got on the TV and said that the Wizards had the best job. And I laughed about that. In fact, mentioned it on Twitter, and then somebody actually tried to argue with me that the Wizards did have, in fact, the best job. And I, you know, if they had the best job, they would not have hired Brian Keefe. And again, that's no shade to Brian Keefe. I'm just saying, like, okay.
You could have got somebody better than Brian Keefe.
I'm not here to say better, but I am here to say they would have gotten somebody that we would have heard of. You know? And they're still dealing with Jordan Poole and that mess.
Fallen off more than Jordan Poole has in the last 2 years? I mean, seriously.
Drake? I don't know.
They not like us.
They're not like us. No, I've actually done a lot of defending of Drake. I will say that for y'all can go back and listen to my last podcast with my man John Rivera and see the piece that we wrote on Drake and Kendrick for my thoughts on that and some of the tweets. I don't think Drake is getting really a fair deal and all this thing, believe it or not, but that's neither here nor there.
Shameless plug.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm always going to shamelessly plug the content that's already out there on the site. I don't know. They drafted some dude named Bilal Coulibaly last year or something like that. I think he was drafted by the Pacers and they traded for him. He averaged 8 points a game last year. They had the boy from Wisconsin. He's looking like a bust. They have Denny Osbia, I think. From a few years ago. He looks like he's okay, but now people are trying to get him up out of Washington. This is one of those teams that other teams kind of pick over the good players there, and then you find a diamond in the rough like a Daniel Gafford, and then you go on your championship run when you steal him from your bottom feeding team. So
I call them the East Coast version of Sacramento. That's
oh, they're way worse than that though now. So
but now they are. I mean, but I'm saying, you know, they just like you said with Sacramento, they constantly picked in the top 10. You were wondering where all these players, you know, they didn't seem good when they were there as Kings, but then when they went to other teams, they actually were halfway decent players.
Yeah, yeah.
But and I think Washington falls in that boat, man. They just have a whole bunch of just flat out high end garbage. They just do, man.
High end garbage. So save the franchise, Mark. Who should they pick second?
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, so it's gonna take more than one player. But I will say this: if in a draft, once again, that doesn't have a clear cut number one, you go. This person actually was debated as being the number one pick, and he just may go number one on Wednesday night. But Zachary Risace, the small forward from France, is the person I would pick for the Wizards because he's 6'9", 200, and he runs the floor just like just as good as any forward in the game today. He has a decent jumper. The Wizards just do not – they lack high-end talent. They got guys who are who chucks up the ball, like Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma. They got, you know, guys like that, but they really don't have any true basketball players. Very low IQ basketball team as a whole, and they need to start getting talent in with higher basketball IQ and start there. So Risace, as they like the Frenchman, as I like to call him, is the person I would use. I mean, he has enough he has enough tools, physical tools and basketball tools to actually be a player. And I would take him if I was a Washington Wizards at two.
Yeah, I believe his name is Risace, if I'm not mistaken.
Risace. Pardon me.
Yeah, no,
I've
no,
heard
no,
it like three different ways.
No. I feel you. So this prospect from France, I like him a lot, you know, relatively speaking to the class that he's surrounded by. I think that he's the type of prospect that you want. 6'10", long reach, good shooter, catch and shoot. I think the question is, are the numbers real? I mean, he shot 38, mm-hmm. almost 39% from three last year, but I don't know if that is legitimate.
Legit.
Mm-hmm. He made under 30% over his last, he shot just 31, less than 30% under his last 31 games. And he made 32% on threes in the previous 3 years overseas. So it almost looks like he just got on a hot streak and got on a little heater. And then that raised his average to 39% and that it's not consistent. So if you told me that Reese Shea's three numbers were consistent, he was going to be consistently around 40% or something like that, I think that he's probably the best prospect in the draft. He can finish in transition. To me, he looks a little bit like a Michael Porter Jr. type cat. I think the private workouts for him are going to be vital. And I think for all these guys, again, in a draft that's not top heavy in terms of star power or anything like that, I think the individual workouts mm-hmm. and I think the interviews and the intangibles, stuff like that, is going to be really vital. I haven't interviewed any of these gentlemen personally myself. I would be looking to find out which of these young men has a lot of drive and competitive fire about them. And that actually might sway my opinion.
Who wants to be great?
Who wants to be great? And that's always important. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, even if you have somebody who is not the most competitive person, but still is crazy talented, like that person, you can go a long way with that person. That person does not exist that's in this right. draft. So, Reese Shea, I think would be a good pick. I'm going to commit to Reese Shea, by the way. But that is a good pick for the Wizards, I think. And they can move off of Kyle Kuzma or whatever, get him back on a contender or something
Please
like that.
Get
I don't
rid
know.
Of him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what his future is, but I don't think he's got much of one in Washington. Neither does Jordan Poole or anybody else that's on that roster at the moment. So shouts to the Wizards. The Houston Rockets, on the other hand, they are living high on the hog. Even though I still can't stand the Rockets for reasons I won't get into right now, it's just this goes back to just years ago hatred I have for them, just the way they've done some of my favorite
Paul
players. Yeah, Charles Barkley. So, okay, whatever.
Right,
be that as it may, the Rockets finished 41-41 last year, Mark, and in a year where they kind of went not all in, but like they spent a bunch of money on Fred VanVleet and stuff, and people were kind of confused on what direction they were going. This team has a lot of talent. They finished 41-41, and Şengün got hurt. Who was their leading scorer.
Yep.
Now, Alfred Şengün, there's an argument to be made that they didn't play their best ball when he was on the court, but he probably is their best player. But, I mean, with him and VanVleet and Jalen Green starting to emerge, you got the Thompson twin that's there. You have my man Tari Eason, who I liked from a draft a couple of years ago. He got hurt, but I liked him a lot. And I'm missing some guys, too. I mean, they have a nice
they're loaded
young nucleus. And they got this pick from the Brooklyn Nets in the Harden deal, believe it or not. So now they're sitting at, Jabari Smith, top three pick from a couple of years ago. Too.
Yes, there you go. There you go. That's what I was forgetting too.
And so Ime Udoka, who resigned in disgrace from the now world champion Boston Celtics, this is a man who managed to fumble away a ring and knee along at one time. Like that is like all time stuff. So Ime is now the head man in Houston, but he can coach. Mm-hmm. It looks like he can coach.
He can.
So what is he doing? What is his front office doing with the third pick?
Well, you pretty much laid it out. This Houston Rockets team is very talented. Quite honestly, if they could have themselves or get themselves a veteran point guard, that would be great. That would probably be the final piece that they would need to really put all of this together. A good veteran point guard who could make plays, who could run an offense, who could get guys set up, get them set up for easy shots, just be a floor general. I think that's something they would truly need. But if they stay at three and they keep the pick, they need to go. The biggest piece right now, I mean, you're paying Fred VanVleet a whole bunch of money. I've never been a Fred VanVleet fan, per se. Say that 10 times fast.
Not a fan, VanVleet.
not a fan. But I understand why they went to get him.
They needed an adult.
they truly need an adult. But I also think that they need a playmaker. They need talent at that position. So for me, if I'm the Houston Rockets, I'm looking at Reed Shepard, the point guard slash shooting guard, however you want to look at it, from Kentucky, because he's 6'3", 180, but he's I watched enough of him being down in SEC territory. I've seen enough of him to know that they needed he can run an offense. He can run the floor. He can get guys set up, and he'll do the right. He'll make the right basketball play, and also make plays for himself. So I think with all of that in, when you put all that together, I think you get Reed Shepard. I think that's the guy that the Rockets should look at. I have another person in mind. Well, I'll get to him later, but that's the person I would want if I were the GM of the Houston Rockets.
So that's an interesting selection. I don't know that if I were running the Rockets that I would take Reed Shepard there, because, well, here's the thing. Reed Shepard is an amazing shooter. We know this, right? So
yes.
I think he is, like, he's got the one skill that we know will translate. He's also, I think, a little bit better athlete than what he might look like. You look at him and assume that
he
can't jump over a bag of nickels, but that's not necessarily the case. In fact, it's not the case.
Right.
And I think he is he's got some defensive tenacity about him. He's definitely a catch and shoot threat. He can shoot the three. He shot 52% on threes this past year at Kentucky. So we know that he can shoot it. He's a little undersized. I think you said he was 6'3". I actually think he's probably 6'1". You know, closer to 6'1", maybe a little taller than that with shoes on, but I think he's undersized is the point. And I think they have an undersized point guard that can shoot already. And that's the guy that they just gave a ton of money to last year. So I don't know that if I were running the Rockets, I would make that selection, unless they wanted to get Reed Shepard in there, let him learn from Fred VanVleet for a year or something. And then that makes VanVleet expendable. Makes him expendable at that point, because they have their point guard of the future with Reed Shepard, and they know that the guy can shoot it and things like that. So I guess I can see it from that perspective, but only if you're not really committed to moving forward with old Freddie Van, you know what I mean? Because yeah, then
that's me. I'm in that mindset. I'm looking at having Reed be his understudy at, if not for an entire year, at least to the All-Star break. And then you move Freddie V for another piece and just hand the reins over to a guy like Reed Shepard. I think you won't lose much if you do that.
I guess the question then becomes,
though,
the
upside is greater.
Well, yeah, but then the question becomes, you know, okay, who's going to take on Fred VanVleet's contract?
Who's gonna
want to deal with that? So you may have to. I mean, again, he's a good player, but it's like, you know,
right
at that point, he's probably going to be a little over the hill. You may have to attach something to that contract to get somebody else to take it off your hands. It's kind of a messy situation at that point. But I think to our initial point about the Rockets having so much young talent, that selecting at three is not an ideal spot to be in, from the standpoint that it's going to be a logjam for playing time no matter who they select.
They got good
young bigs, they got good young wings, and they got a good young guards. Like, I don't really know, you know what I mean? I mean, they cut Kevin Porter Jr. and didn't miss a beat, right? So
right, exactly.
So okay,
and they should have done that, by the way.
and we like Kevin Porter, but man, yeah, wasted talent. The fourth pick, the San Antonio Spurs, 22-60 on the year. That Greg Popovich, just amazing, 22-60. Now, but in all seriousness, though, has there ever been a team that's this exciting with a record that bad? I mean, they have the biggest thing in basketball, literally and figuratively, in Victor Wembanyama, who looks like a can't-miss cornerstone piece. I mean, Vic looks like the type of dude that is guaranteed to win at least one MVP and at least one championship in his career. That's what he looks like. And that's the floor. That's the basement for Wembanyama.
Right.
That's kind of how it looks, right? So as long as they don't screw it up. And they've got some pieces around them. They got Sohan. They got Keldon Johnson, who kind of fell off a little bit. Our man Devin Vassell, who we talk about every year on the mock draft, because I pounded the table for him a couple of years ago.
Give you props for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, he turned out to be a good player, man, and they picked him like 11th or 12th in the first round. And so my thing was like, hey, That was the year that the Cavs took Isaac Okoro, and I was making the case that if there's nobody that they really like at five or whatever pick that was, to trade back and then get Devin Vassell. So Vassell turned out to be a better player than Isaac Okoro, but and so had they done that, they'd be sitting pretty because they would have gotten an extra asset plus Vassell. Having said that, I think we need to kind of reshift how we look at these picks, and I think I've said this on the past on the mock draft, but we really need to look at this as the goal. If you pick in the top five, the goal should not be get an MVP of the future. I mean, maybe those guys exist, and that's great. But the real goal of picking in the top five is to get a rotation player on a playoff team. Like, that's kind of where the bar needs to be reset, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I think Reed Sheppard could be that, by the way. I think, you know, his floor is like a Peyton Pritchard type. That's his floor, right? So, like, he can be a rotation player. So, like, whoever is the fourth pick for San Antonio, you want to make sure that you have a rotation piece for the future. You're probably not going to get an all-star. You're not going to get an all-NBA, and you're not going to get an MVP. But lucky for San Antonio, they already have that. So what should they do then with this pick?
Well, I've seen everything about San Antonio, what they want them to do. I've seen them rumors about trading for Darius Garland from the Cavs and actually a couple other players that they try to get in. But the consistent position that they've been rumored to go ahead and trade for are point guards. Because you look at what they are, what they have a good rotation of wing players. They have a decent amount of front court players, but they do not have that point guard, that floor general, who not only can, you know, run offense, especially run Pop's offense, but also get everybody else involved, and also in one-on-one situations can be able to shoot, which is one of the things why I was so concerned about when they got rid of DeJounte Murray at the time. But Murray, I looking back on it, I think he was more primed to score more than setting up other people. So I think with what San Antonio should do, they need to look for their floor general or somebody who can be, like you said, a rotational piece that as this team grows and gets to be more comfortable in the West and competing for playoff spots. So if I'm them, I would go with Stephon Castle, the guard from UConn, because not only does he have size on an already tall team for the most part, he's athletic. He can provide an instant impact for the Spurs that probably some of these other guys that's listed here that are lottery picks probably won't be able to do so. That's the person I would look at if I was a Spurs.
That is an interesting selection. Stephon Castle is a guy who, I mean, he was a key piece on the UConn team that just repeated as national champion. And he did that as a freshman. Yep. My issue with him is, well, for starters, he can't shoot. That's the biggest thing. I mean, and you know, he can't shoot from the perimeter. I see his game. I think he's got like some kind of a little bit of a mid-range game to him. Like he can kind of get to his spots and get to the cup when he needs to. I see a little bit of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in his game. Not that he's going to be a scorer at that level or a foul merchant at that level necessarily, but
foul merchant.
But I mean, but he seems polished by 19-year-old standards, and he can kind of get to where he needs to get to. He has some good mid-range game and some potential to be a three-level scorer, but he can't shoot threes at all. And so, you know, maybe they can get away with that because Wemby can shoot threes, and so there's potential that the rest of the guys, the rest of the makeup of the San Antonio team can space the floor enough that Stephon Castle's lack of ability to shoot threes is not going to hurt them too much. But I do think that him as, you know, an elite defender and him coming from a place like where like UConn with the culture that they've built there, kind of like Villanova was with Jay Wright. Like Dan Hurley's got a system there that is working beautifully. And I believe that Stephon Castle is the type of guy that he can come in and be the right type of I don't want to say culture changer, because we know the Spurs have a good culture historically, but he's going to fit right in, you would think, going from UConn to San Antonio. I just don't know if he's ever going to reach his full potential if his jumper doesn't come around, which it probably will over time. But, you know, I mean, San Antonio may be in the playoff mix next year, so they don't have a lot of time to waste. And then
that's true.
And I don't know if he's a true, true point guard, to be honest with you. So when you talk about a floor general, I don't know if he's that guy. I would love for my guy Chris Paul to wind up in San Antonio. He would be somebody if he were to exit Golden State, and I think he's still looking at playing, he's still effective and he can still get it done when he's out there, and he still makes every team that he goes to better. So I believe that CP3 would be great next to Wemby, and he could mentor whomever the young point guard is that the Spurs end up with, be it Reed Shepherd or somebody else.
And they also have an 8th pick too, so they can make a deal for somebody like Chris Paul if they want to. So I mean, the possibilities are endless for
them. They do pick 8th, San Antonio. We should mention that. And I mean, they're not going to trade the 8th pick for Chris Paul, I wouldn't think. But you know, I think that they have enough ammunition to go out and get him, even if he's not just outright released by the Golden State, which I think is a possibility. So picking 5th is the living, breathing mess, the catastrophe that is the Detroit Pistons. Just a joke of a franchise right now in basketball. And there's a few jokes out there. I mean, there's a lot of ha-has in this draft at the top. I mean, it's very much a have and have not league right now. Either you got some guys and you're competing for the championship, or you got nothing. And there's not a lot of middle class in the NBA right now. But Detroit, 14-67 last year, and they wound up with the 5th pick. That is brutal.
That sucks.
They just fired Monty Williams, Mark, who they just signed to an exorbitant amount of money just last year. I mean, his contract was laughably rich. at the time.
They stole him $65 million. Russell Wilson type money.
I mean, it's just like, what are we doing over there? And they let him out of his contract.
We're paying you just to go away.
I mean, why did they bring him in the first place? He wasn't even in their headspace to take that job, and they made it an offer that he couldn't refuse, and it's just a catastrophe. So they still don't have a coach as of right now. Cade Cunningham, I mean, what is he? Like, he's good. Is he a franchise guy? Is he a number one guy on a playoff team, on a championship team? Like, I don't think he's any of those things. I didn't love Cade Cunningham coming out. I thought he was talented, but I never thought that he was
me neither
at that level. And you can go back and listen to that mock draft. So, you know, between that and they got Asar Thompson, Jaden Ivey, Jaden Duren, there's some decent young players there, but they are just a mess all the way around. They also drafted Killian Hayes a few years ago. That did not pan out. What on earth do the Pistons do to try to resurrect this once great franchise and turn them into something that's at least a little bit watchable?
All right, so there's right now a team that I think besides Washington is a very close second, but there's not a team I despise more in basketball than the Detroit Pistons. And it for a number of different reasons. I mean, they are an insult to the game of basketball. And I've watched a lot of Detroit Pistons basketball over the years, and like this is an actual embarrassment of a franchise. So me personally, especially after what they did with Monty Williams, first of all, I'm surprised they even able to get a coach. And one of the coaches they're actually looking at is JB Bickerstaff, which I find hilarious. But if I were the GM of the Pistons, first of all, I would be trying to look for another job. I would be putting my application out on Indeed or something like the Glassdoor or whatever to try to find some other place to work. But if I'm stuck there in the meantime, I would blow everything up. I would probably keep Jaden Ivey and everybody else I would get rid of.
Even Kate.
I am done with that entire roster. I mean, there's nobody on there that's worth saving, in my opinion, besides Jaden Ivey that I would want to build around. I got a bunch of malcontents on there, and I would just start over. But if everybody still has their jobs at this point, everybody's on the roster, what I would do for the Pistons, I mean, at this point, you got to swing for the fences because you really don't have any clear cutters at this point. And at the fifth pick, I would take Matas Buzelis, the forward. He goes between small forward and power forward for the G League Ignite. One of the things that Detroit needs, at least with the roster that they have, they need floor spacing. They have, you know, the guys, too many guys clogging up the middle. They need to space it out a little bit and get some more positional versatility. So I think Matas would be the guy that I would look at, because he's very slim at 6'10", like he's listed at 6'10", 195. So he's very small. He definitely needs to add more muscle, just like, you know, the common stuff that we always talk about with young players. But I think he has enough potential to the point where it can at least give them something on both the offensive and defensive end. And that, besides blowing it up, that's what I would do if I was the GM for Detroit.
Buzelis is kind of projected to be a stretch four. He's got pretty good size and length, like you said, about somewhere between 6'8", 6'10", with a 6'10 wingspan and just 19 years old. He can block shots, but I'm not a fan of his personally, just from seeing what I've seen and from reading up on him a little bit. I mean, I know that he shot, 27% on threes last year, 44.5% shooting overall at 6'10". Or whatever he is, 6'8", 6'10", is not particularly great. So he'd fit right in Detroit.
Yeah, exactly.
Not really great off the bounce or finishing at the cup. So he's got a long way to go. Again, I'm not, you know, I don't know enough about this particular class to suggest that, you know, our friend Matas here can't be a rotational NBA player. But
Detroit ain't winning no time soon. So what?
Well, they've got everything to lose in Detroit, which means they've got nothing to lose because they've lost all their basketball games. So there's not. So at this point, it's like, what else are they going to lose for real? Like, everybody, Monty Williams is out of a job. Like, what else is there at this point? I mean, everybody's kind of on their last leg anyways. They might as well just screw it and swing for the fences. So, you know, in the name of Anthony Bennett, Matas Buzelis is the number five pick of the draft. The Hornets are sixth, 21-61. It's been about a year since Michael Jordan sold the majority share in the team. And by the way, Michael Jordan is having a rough week right now. If you paid attention on social media or anything online, they coming from a man Jordan's neck, which is hilarious. the Hornets, luckily for them, Miles Bridges, despite his off-the-court issues, is a decent player. LaMelo can play, but I don't think he's some kind of franchise-changing guy like people tried to make him out to be when he came in. And Brandon Miller's good, 17 points a game on 44, 37, and 83 shooting splits in his rookie season. He's good. I tend to play this game with you every year on the mark draft, a la who he played for, in the name of Inside the NBA, which we hope never goes away. Mark, can you name the head coach of these Charlotte Hornets?
Are you kidding me? Hell no. I don't know that guy's name.
That guy's name is Charles Lee. Charles Lee.
Jesus. Which, are you serious?
I thought he sold blue jeans or something. I didn't know who this guy was. His name is Charles Lee, though. He was actually the lead assistant for the Celtics. So he just won a ring with the Boston Celtics.
Oh, my God.
And now he's running the Hornets. So good for him. He's also like my age. So I don't know if I'm young anymore. I mean, I'm about the same age as, you know, a lot of coaches now. You know, J.J. Redick just got hired. So this is my wheelhouse. So I'm like, okay. But Charles Lee, new coach of the Charlotte Hornets. Your Charlotte Hornets. So, Mark, they're hanging out at number six, man. What do they do?
Well, as it's currently constructed, you have LaMelo Ball, who's playing point guard. You got Brandon Miller as your two. You got Miles Bridges as your four. You got, you know, a whole bunch of other guys. They're not as terrible as they appear. They just look bad because
they appear terrible.
Michael Jordan owning them. They did.
The appearance is bad.
But I think they have some. They have some players, though, and they really do. The one position that they're really missing in my opinion, is at the small forward spot. And, you know, in this draft, you're going to be, you know, we're just rolling a lot of dice here. I mean, in my opinion, no GM should lose their job over a pick here in this draft. Just as that's how
well said. That's well said, Mark. Well said.
They should get an immunity 2-year extension on their job. Yes, exactly.
They get immunity.
They should get immunity for. They should just like cut this whole thing out and start over 2025 and start grading from there. But the person I would take if I was Charlotte, I would take Dalton Knecht, small forward from Tennessee. Two things that the Charlotte Hornets need with the current roster that they have is positional versatility. In my opinion, what that basically means is guards who are interchangeable with guarding other guards, forwards who are interchangeable guarding other forwards, and they also need shooting, which everybody needs shooting in this league. If you're not Boston, or Golden State, but Dalton Knecht is he's listed as 6'6". He's more like he's between 6'6" and 6'7". So he plays that wing position. He may not necessarily be a starter, but he's a guy who can come off the bench, play 15 to 18 minutes, and if he hits a couple threes or whatever, and gives you some type of addition offensively, I think he's worth it at this point. There's other directions that they could go, but I think he would be the guy that would fit the best for Charlotte at this point. So that's who I'm going with.
Dalton Knecht is a senior, so hopefully
right,
for him, I believe he'd be the first. Yeah, he'd be the first senior taken. The oldest dude that we've talked about so far is already 23. So yeah. Hopefully, he would be the adult in the room, so to speak, amongst the young guys that are there. In Charlotte, I think that I wouldn't take him here personally, but it's not the Justin draft, it's the Mark draft. But I think that he can definitely shoot. I mean, he shot 40% on threes and averaged just under 22 points a game with 5 boards. That's very productive at the college level. And I feel like this is your classic white dude wing player coming into the league. Like, we've seen Kyle Korver, we've seen Adam Morrison. Mm-hmm. You know, Taylor Coppenrath comes to mind. Although I don't think he went to the league, but you know what I mean? Your big white boy on the wing, you know, Dylan Windler.
Gordon Hayward.
Although he's like the lower budget. Yeah, Gordon Hayward, former Hornet. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's this guy. And I feel like we've seen this dude before, and we know that he's got a spot in the league. There's a spot for him in the NBA. Doug McDermott comes to mind. Like, again,
right.
We've seen these dudes. And a big score. I mean, he had like 40-point games, 39-point games last year. But he was a senior playing against a bunch of kids. And, you know, so, again, you can do worse. And in a draft like this, it's not a bad you could look at it and say, well, we'll swing for the fences. Or you could look at it and say, you know what, take the most surest thing on the board, these high-floor guys. And Dalton Knecht is definitely a high-floor guy. So I would not, you know, I can understand it from that vantage point. Portland. Another joke of a franchise right now is picking 7th. They're 21-61. You're going to hear a lot of sixes to start off the number of losses that these teams have at this point. This is their first year without Damian Lillard, and they won 21 games. They're in guard hell right now with Anthony Simons, Shaedon Sharpe, and Scoot Henderson. Not that they're bad players, but it's just like, what do we do with these three dudes? Like, yeah, it's a law jam. And it's like, they just got out of a law jam. They had Dame and CJ and these guys, like, they just walked right back into another law jam at the guard spot. Undersized dudes that can score and not really do a lot else. So I don't know what they're doing there. And they don't really have any legitimate front court help. I mean, you know, Jeremy Grant and DeAndre Ayton, whatever, like, okay, what do you do? How do you help them?
Well, deep side. Like, yeah, that's just bad, man. Yeah. Quite honestly, I don't know where to go with this, but one of the things that my biggest problem with having the small backcourt, who that's a defensive liability, they can score a lot of points, but they dominate the ball, their defensive liability, is the fact that you pair them with a front court that doesn't score any points, and is no help offensively, which means everything relies on the backcourt. So they're doing it again. You know, they when they brought in Ayton and they tried to spread it out, that they've done a good job with it, but they still need more help in the front court. They needed, I think, more than anything, with a young team like this, they need defensive identity. Ayton is a decent player defensively when he's motivated, but I think they need more. And when I look at this, you to help with their defensive identity and get a defensive backbone, they need players who establish that. So for me, if I'm Portland, I'm looking at Donovan Clingan from UConn, the big center, and you pair him in a rotation with DeAndre Ayton, and then you have basically an offensive defensive center position now that you can rally around, where if you need points, you can go with Ayton, and if you don't need if you need defensive stop, if you need a block shot, if you need someone to clog the middle, this guy can do that. So that's what I would do if I'm Portland. I need to shore up that backcourt, and I mean the front court, and that's where direction I would go if I was them, especially with the players that's on the board now. I would go with Donovan Clingan.
Clingan, another high floor guy, right? I mean, I think that we kind of know what he is at worst, and there's a space in the league for him to be productive. But I mean, I think his biggest problem is that he came along 25 years too late. You know what I'm saying? If he came around in 1994, you know what I'm saying? We're talking about the number one pick that everybody's excited about, and you're building your team around him. You come around in 2024.
He'd be one of the best centers in basketball.
I mean, yeah. Now, I've seen some people mock him to number one, and some people say he's the best prospect in this draft. And I don't quite see that from him, especially seeing as how everybody is kind of not high on Zach Edey from Purdue. And I feel like they're kind of similar type players, unless Edey is that much slower than Clingan. Maybe he is, but I mean, if he's that much slower than Clingan, then yeah, there's going to be a difference there. But I see them as very similar type prospects. He's a great rim runner. He can defend and rebound. He's got a good post game. But the problem is nobody's throwing him the ball in the post to get him some post looks. I don't see that happening. Not even on this Portland team with all these guards. They're not going to be throwing him the ball down there to cook. But Clingan would, I believe, put DeAndre Ayton in a different space on the floor to where he can kind of operate in that high post area where he likes to, you know, we saw him make a living off those pick and pop jumpers at the top of the key with Chris Paul. Like, I feel like Ayton can live in that space and Clingan can do the dirty work down below because he's just a massive human being. So, he's got no game outside of 10 feet that I've seen. That's the only thing. So,
I agree with you. But the reason why I also went with this selection for Portland, look at who their coach is.
Look what type of
team that he is used to playing with guys who really don't have much of an offensive game, but defensively set a tone, like Ben Wallace, for example, and help set a tone on the defensive end that spread throughout the entire roster. And especially with a young team like this, they're going to need some type of defensive identity. Otherwise, they're not winning anything in the West, which they probably won't anyway. But I think this guy can at least help them, guide them in that direction. Like you said, he can help push if they play. Let's say they play both him and Ayton together. He can move Ayton off from the block where he don't like to be anyway. You can put him in a high post, like you said, get him on the outside. Occasionally shooting a 20 footer or a corner three. And that opens up the whole floor and opens up a different dynamic for Portland. So that's one of the reasons why I was selecting Clingan, is because of who his coach would be. And not necessarily about, you know, what the dynamics would be in today's basketball, because he has, like you said, he has a place 25 years ago, and it's not the case now. But I think you can still make it work if you have the right pieces around him. And I think that's where, you know, they have to, you know, Portland has to play chess instead of checkers and try to manipulate the players that they have, and also relieve some of that logjam in the backcourt. They're going to have to do some things and maneuver around to get another piece, probably a small forward or something, or wing player, or something that, that will help them out on for the long haul. I don't think Portland, having all these guards is going to be what their goal should be.
It's worth noting too that Portland does have a pick at the end of the lottery, so correct. Maybe they can do something with that. Now, picking eighth is San Antonio, who already picked fourth, and you had them taking Stephon Castle at number four. So, who are they taking at eight?
Okay, so at eight, if I'm San Antonio and everything's played out the way that it has, and we're still looking at this type of a draft, for them, I would be looking at someone who could also, you know, help them impact and help them establish some their new identity as a franchise. I'm probably going to butcher his name. I tried to find out exactly how it's pronounced, but to John A. Saloon from France, the power forward, I would look at him as another person that could work with Jerry Sochan and all these other guys and trying to help beef up that front court. So that's what I would go with if I'm San Antonio.
I got it down as Tyjon Salon.
Tyjon Salon. Makes sense to me.
Not to be confused with Rashawn Salam. Tyjon Salon. He's 6'10". He's a 6'10 wing with he's a good cutter, good instincts. He likes to roll to the rim for lobs, and I like his upside. I do. So I think that kind of getting Castle, who's another high floor guy, I think getting somebody with some upside makes some sense for San Antonio as well. His issue is that he's never been a good shooter either, and mm-hmm. I don't really know what substance there is to his game beyond catching lobs and stuff like that and cutting to the rim. I think Popovich can help with that, though. And I think playing with a guy like Wemby can help with that. So I think that there's a world in which Salon goes to San Antonio and can really thrive. Ninth is the Memphis Grizzlies, who are coming off the year from hell. They went 27-55, and everybody was hurt. Like, once they finally got Ja Morant and that gun stuff cleared up, he immediately gets hurt. Desmond Bane got hurt. Brandon Clark got hurt. Everybody outside of Jaren Jackson Jr. got hurt. And now they're, like, putting the franchise on GG Jackson. You know what I'm saying? So what are you thinking Memphis ought to be doing for Taylor Jenkins to help them bounce back to relevancy in the West?
Well, first of all, they lack a wing player, in my opinion. You know, like you said, everybody got hurt. Desmond Bane, Ja Morant with the suspension, and then he comes back, gets hurt. Brandon Clark. I mean, there are a whole bunch of guys, key guys for them, got hurt, except for Tristan Thompson. I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. He reminds me so much of Tristan Thompson.
He can shoot, though, at least.
It's Tristan Thompson with a jump shot, exactly. It's Tristan with a three-point shot. But if I'm Memphis, I would go with Cody Williams from Colorado. I think he's the type of guy that will fit in with Memphis, and he has that style of play. I think that will fit with Ja and the rest of the guys that's there and provide a different dynamic for them. So going forward, that's the person I would go with. I would go with Cody Williams.
There's something about Cody Williams' game that looks a little off to me. So that isn't to say that he doesn't have some ability, and he's got mm-hmm. good height and length. He's rangy. His shooting numbers look really good. His jumper looked a little unorthodox to me, but I mean, the guy can hit threes, it so it appears. So, I mean, that's always good to be 19 years old, shooting 40% from three, over 40%. And he's actually the brother of Jalen Williams from Oklahoma City. I did not know that until just now, but yes. He's got some ability there. We'll see. You know, something about his game, like he can get to the rim, he can hit threes. He does the things that you would want a wing to do. Something about his game, just for me, looks a little off, for lack of a better term. But
I kind of feeling you on that too. But what do you think, in your opinion, what do you think is like off?
It's just the way he looks when he shoots, and the way he looks when he goes to the rim. Like, he just has like a weird kind of finish at the cup, like weird looking layup package. I don't know. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it means nothing. Or maybe it means everything. Who knows?
Everything.
Yeah. So moving along, we'll go to the Utah, where the Jazz have the 10th pick. So I think Danny Ainge is still out there brain typing cats, but they finished 31-51. This is a Utah team that has a better record, that's better than what their record appears. They were 31-51, but they kind of just backed out at the end of the year and just kind of took the foot off the gas. But I mean, because they know they weren't like making a finals run or anything like that. But with Will Hardy, a good young coach there, and Lauri Markkanen and Young Bull and Walker Kessler and Jordan Clarkson off the bench, and John Collins can still play. They drafted Taylor Hendricks, I think, a year ago, who I liked coming out from, I think it was UCF, if I'm not mistaken. So, Keontae George. Like, they got some talent there in Utah. So, how would you help them now? Maybe something in the backcourt. I don't know. What are you thinking?
I would go with somebody in the backcourt. They need somebody who... I sound like a broken record this draft, but they need a point guard, man. And it's just like... It is for the type of team that they want to be. I think the guy that I would look at for Utah at this point in the draft is Rob Dillingham from Kentucky. That's the guy I would look at. They need someone with upside, which I think Rob can be a ball handler. They need someone who has the potential, if Coach Wright can be and help out with on ball as an on ball defender. That last one is a stretch for Rob, but I think he has the potential to do that. And, you know, Utah needs all the help they can get in the backcourt from that perspective. So that's who I would look at. I would look at Rob Dillingham as their future point guard on that team.
So I like that pick, and I don't like that pick. Here's why.
Okay.
I don't like that pick because we mentioned they have Jordan Clarkson and they have Colin Sexton. So those are two kind of undersized shoot-first guards. And now you're saying that Rob Dillingham may come in and be the point guard. He averaged 4 assists a game at Kentucky playing next to Reed Shepard. But is he a true point? You know what I mean? I don't know if he's a true point, if he has that true point mentality, or if he has that scorer's mentality. He didn't start at Kentucky. He came off the bench and was the sixth man of the year for the SEC. But then so did Devin Booker. Devin Booker didn't start at Kentucky.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Yeah,
he turned out pretty well. I think he's crafty going to the cup, but he's only 6'1". Mm-hmm. So, the biggest thing though is I think you kind of have that logjam of undersized scoring combo guards if you bring in Rob Dillingham to pair with Colin Sexton and Jordan Clarkson. That's why I don't like that pick. Here's why I like that pick. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Utah Jazz, I'm never ever drafting another white guy ever again. And here's, and you know why that is? Because the Utah Jazz are never going to get a dude from the hood to be a free agent and go to Utah. That ain't happening.
Nope.
They can only get that dude in the draft. You know what I mean? And I shouldn't even mean from the hood, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it didn't even got to be from the hood. But no black person is going to willfully go to Utah. Donovan Mitchell got drafted there, and he made the best of it. But Donovan Mitchell is the type of player that would never go to Utah otherwise. So the only hope they have of getting a dude like that is to draft him. So I'm talking about the blackest of black players with the upside and the braids and the dreads that can jump out of the gym and is a bucket and can break down defenses and, you know, that can dribble the ball like Kyrie and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever stereotypes you have of black basketball players, they need to get drafted to Utah. You feel me? Never again should they ever draft Dalton Kennett. From Tennessee. Never draft that guy in Utah.
That's a Utah Jazz player.
Never do that. So, I like Rob Dillingham for them because Rob Dillingham probably wouldn't choose to go to Utah. But you can get a dude like that who can average, he's an instant bucket off the bench or however you decide to play him. That dude is a bucket.
Right.
So, you get a dude like that in there and let the chips fall where they may, work out the rest with Clarkson and work out the rest with Colin Sexton or whatever. But
I think if they were to do something like that with Rob, I think Jordan Clarkson would be on the move because of the fact that he's a better player. He makes a ton of money comparatively, and the fact that Jordan Clarkson is older and they have a younger squad. I think he would be the type of guy that they would move, but
I agree with you 100%. They need to start drafting these athletic guys. And they, for whatever reason, they just, Utah has been very stringent upon not doing that. And that's what's been holding their franchise back. Because you just can't draft all these other type of guys.
I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't say that's been holding their franchise back, but I just think that they need not draft any. You know, the way the Indiana Pacers draft, the Utah Jazz should never draft that way. That's all I'm saying. the 11th pick is the Chicago Bulls. I don't know what the Bulls is doing because they just traded your boy Alex Caruso to the Thunder for the Giddler. You know, I don't know why they decided to put their faith in the Giddler right now, who I never really care for too much anyway. But I love Alex Caruso, and so does friend of the podcast, Kenneth Hicks. We know that. And he's now left the Windy City. You got DeMar DeRozan dancing on stage with Kendrick. The Bulls are just kind of existing, and they need a shot in the arm. So how would you help them? 39-43 last year.
I honestly don't know what to do with them. They need so many different types of things. One of the things I've read about the Bulls is that they need on-ball defense.
They just traded
their best defensive player. Exactly. Like, what are you doing?
Like, I think he was on a good contract, I mean, too. They, like, what?
Yes, he was.
He was a free agent to be, but still.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. But for the Bulls, if I'm them at this point, I'm looking at Devin Carter, the guard from Providence. If for nothing else, he could provide a spark off the bench offensively, where if he reaches his full potential, he can provide a spark off the bench offensively like Caruso does defensively. And I think with the Bulls, I mean, they just need so much. There's really no one player that's going to really help them. But at least with this type of draft and where they're picking, I mean, they can get somebody who can help them. If not immediately, within, you know, the next, you know, year or so, help him off the bench. I mean, at worst, he can be a rotational player. So that, you know, when you get into the back end of the lottery and into the 20s, you're looking for guys, you very rarely get a star. So you're going to be looking for guys who can be a rotational piece, a guy who can get some minutes for you on your roster. And for the Bulls, I'm looking at Devin Carter for that position.
So when it comes to guys in the draft that I like that we've talked about so far, Devin Carter is one of them. I'm big on Devin Carter. I got some Devin Carter stock. I like Rob Dillingham that you mentioned earlier. I like Risa Shea that we talked about earlier. But I really feel like Devin Carter, who's the son of Anthony Carter, the former Orlando point guard. And, you know, I think Yahoo actually just put out an article this week that talked about how legacy players in the NBA – I think they called him, what they call him, like Neo Hoopers or something like that. I forgot what the phrase was. But
I think it was Neo Hoopers.
Something like that. Those legacy players, those sons of NBA players, those guys tend to outperform where they're drafted on the regular. And I think Devin Carter is I think he's got real talent. And I think he's got some real ability. He reminds me, I've seen him compared to Drew Holiday. I think he reminds me more of Devin White because, I mean, he's like
I would agree with you on that.
Derek White, not Devin White. Derek I knew White. I was going to make that mistake. I wrote down Devin White earlier thinking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. No, Derek White that just won the championship for the Celtics. He reminds me of Derek White more than Drew Holiday even. He averaged 19 a game. He shot 60% true shooting. He shot 37%, almost 38 from three. 8.5 boards at 6'2.5". Height, something like that. 3.5 assists. The guy's an adult. He's 22 years old. I like this dude. I think he's competitive. He's got one of the highest verticals in the draft. He reminds me, his jumper's ugly, but it goes in. Like I said, he reminds me, as long as those jumpers keep falling, he reminds me of like a Derek White, or if short of that, like a Josh Hart type cat. Like competitive, rebounder, like willing to stick his nose in, terrific defender. I love Devin Carter for this draft class, and he's one of my favorites. So I think that would be a great pick for the Bulls, in spite of the fact that they got rid of Caruso. The Thunder picked 12th. So this is a pick that they actually got from Houston, I believe, in the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook heist, super heist of 2019-2020. And so,
are you serious?
Yeah. So the Thunder, 57-25, they were the one seed in the West, Mark. They lost in the second round, but we know they have SGA. We know Chet is real. They got Jalen Williams. They got the other Jalen Williams. They got Lu Dort. They got Caruso. Like, they got it all, it seems like. And they got a bevy of picks and everything in front of them. So how would you help them now? They really don't even need to take this pick, but if they're taking somebody, what should they do with it?
They really don't need to take this pick. Quite honestly, if I were them, I would try to if I could, I would trade it for a veteran. But, you know, because they do, I think they just need to get a little bit older. But at the same time, one of the things, if you look at how the Thunder lost in the second round, it's because of the fact that they were getting out rebounded, even though they had Chet is long and he can get to the rim and he blocks shots. They still, as a team, did not rebound ball very well. So they need not only rebounding, they need paint protection. I mean, letting guys, you know, run downhill a lot in the playoffs, and they were getting exposed for that. This may not necessarily be a popular pick, but in my opinion, the guy that I would be looking at if I'm Oklahoma City is Zach Edey from Purdue. And the reason why is because, if nothing else, he's going to clog up the middle. With him and Chet out there, they're gonna cause havoc within the paint. Even though he is 7'1", he is a very good rebounder, and he's a good enough post player to the point where you can do some things with him with that team, and I think he fits. I think other than probably Miami, in my opinion, this is the best place for Zach Edey to go because of what he brings to the table and what the team that he's going to actually needs. And I think that would be a good spot for him to go, in my opinion, if the Thunder decide to take him at 12.
I don't think there's a better team in the business that's better at drafting and developing right now than the Oklahoma City Thunder. So if there's a team that I'm confident in that could turn Zach Edey into a pro player, they would be high on the list, you know, as far as a team that I believe could really do that successfully. I don't think that they will take him, but
no.
But I can, you know, but you know, again, this is the Mark draft. And so I can see where you're coming from there. And I do agree that they do need a little bit more bulk up front to pair with Chet Holmgren, so he's not getting pushed around constantly like he was this past year. So that would be one way to go. The Sacramento Kings are next. They are 46-36, a disappointing season. Not quite enough beam lights last year. They lit the beam a little bit, not as much as the year before. It's kind of a letdown. They still got some all-NBA players. They had two all-NBA players 2 years ago with Fox and Sabonis. Now, this past year, it was just Sabonis. But there's still some ability there. They re-signed Malik Monk last week for $78 million over 4 years. How you help Mike Brown out?
By firing him.
Come on, man.
I'm really so bitter about that dude, man. Yeah. But anyway, if I'm Sacramento, I would look at trying to help themselves out in the front court, whether it's as a starter or a bench. I'm not sure where Harrison Barnes is contractually, but if I have a possibility of eventually upgrading that position, I would. If nothing else right now, I'll get an understudy for him. So the person I would look at would be Ron Holland from G League Ignite, because he offers versatility at that wing position. And if he comes anywhere close to his potential, he could be the guy that's going to take the place of Harrison Barnes whenever that time is, maybe sooner than later. But I think he has the potential to do well, and especially in that system. So that's who I would look at. I would look at Ron Holland from the Ignite to go.
Yeah, he's a wing that can't really shoot, though. So at least not yet. So I don't want to make it sound like we're burying Ron Holland here, but you know, at 6'5", 6'6", in that range, shooting 27% on threes. And I know I keep going back to the 3-point percentages, but that's just the nature of the beast. That's the NBA world that we're living in today. And he's not really spacing the floor. He's a good defender. He's a good athlete. He's aggressive in his demeanor. And so I think that there's some things to like about him. I do kind of feel like they already have that in the guard form of Davion Mitchell, but Ron Holland, you know, again, he can only replace Harrison Barnes if he can hit an open three. If he can't hit a corner three, he don't need to be replacing Harrison Barnes just yet. But Ron Holland, not a bad pick. And to round out the lottery, it's the Portland Trail Blazers picking again. They had the 7th pick. You have them taking Donovan Clingan. Where do you have Portland headed with the 14th pick?
I will be looking to as a possibility to help defensively, and also as a possibility of just getting more talent in the front court. For me, if I'm Portland, I'm looking at Jacoby Walter from Baylor. I've seen a couple of his games. He's a wing. He's on the shorter side. He's like the 6'6", 6'5" type of range. But one thing about Baylor, and I watched Baylor a lot being in Texas the last 5 years, one thing Baylor players can do, if nothing else, they don't step on that court if they don't know how to defend. And Jacoby Walter can defend, if nothing else. And I think he, you know, Lou Dort has shown that there's areas or there's places in the NBA for guys like him. I think Jacoby Walter can be that type of a guy, especially for a young team like Portland, who's all about, you know, got all these guards and stuff who's jacking up shots and want to, you know, do all the highlight stuff. And I think Jacoby Walter, he can do a lot of the dirty work that nobody else really wants to do. And I think that's beneficial for a team like Portland, especially a young team like that. So that's who I would look at if I was them at 14.
Jacoby Walter, I agree with you about Baylor having defenders. And this kid is another one that is right out of that same mold, like Davion Mitchell that we just referenced a minute ago.
Right.
He's kind of a wing combo guard, you know, but he can hit a three. And I think he's a good fit with how you described it, right? Like a guy that can go in and do the dirty work that maybe you wouldn't count on a Scoot Henderson or a Shaedon Sharpe to necessarily do. So right. I feel like there's a spot for him with that team for that reason. So let's go back and recap the 2024 draft lottery, the mock draft. With the first pick, the Atlanta Hawks will take Alex Sarr. Second, the Wizards would take Zachary Risacher. Third, the Rockets will take Reed Shepard. Fourth, the Spurs should take Stephon Castle from UConn. Fifth, the Sorry Pistons should take Matas Buzelis from, I believe it was from the Ignite, I think, most recently. The Charlotte Hornets will take Dalton Connect at the 6th pick. 7th, Donovan Clingan, also from UConn, would go to the Blazers. 8th would be Tyjon Salon to the Spurs. 9th, the Grizzlies would take Cody Williams. 10th, the Jazz should take Rob Dillingham. 11th, the Bulls would take Devin Carter. 12th, the Thunder would take Zach Edey, kind of a surprise there. 13th, Ron Holland would go to Sacramento. And 14th, Jacoby Walter from Baylor going to the Portland Trailblazers. There is one guy who I really like that is a projected lottery pick or close to it that you didn't mention. And it's not Bronny James. So any guesses as to who that is?
I may be way off. How about Jared McCain from Duke?
It's Jared McCain from Duke.
Believe it or not, I have him going next to the Miami Heat.
Oh, please, God, no. Come on. What are you doing to me? Heaven to Murgatroyd, Mark. He better not go to the damn Miami Heat. Come on, man. He's too good for them. I'm so sick of the Miami Heat getting these guys. No, absolutely not. I will storm the league office in New York on Park Avenue or wherever the hell they are if he ends up in Miami. I'm not having that. I like Jared McCain. That dude is a real shooter. You can see it. You can see it in his stroke. He can really shoot the ball, and he averaged 5 boards a game. He's got good size as a point guard, 6'2". The only thing that, you know, I'm a little unsure of is if he can be a true point. If he can be a true point and kind of work on his feel for the game and work, not even work on that, but just almost, it's more so just being a distributor, being a floor general, working on his floor game. Like, if he can do that and elevate that level of his game, I have no doubts that he's going to be very, very good, especially if he goes to Miami, which is why I desperately don't want him to go there. But yeah, Jared McCain is a guy that I really like. And when I mentioned Bronny James, give me your quick 90-second Bronny James take, because we're about to get out of here, but we have a couple other things to touch upon before we go.
Okay. So my overall impression of Bronny James is, first of all, I've never seen a guy shrink so much in the last, like, 5 years. like Bronny James. I remember when he was in high school and they was talking about him being 6'5". Then they had a picture of him and his brother Bryce standing next to each other, and Bryce was so much taller than him that it was there's no way this kid is 6'5". So then he graduated from high school, then he goes right before he goes to USC, he's talking about him being 6'3". And then he goes to the combine, and now he's like 6'1". By the time he's in his second year of the league, he'll be like 5'8". So he's shrinking. I love his. I like the fact of his tenacity, especially defensively. With his size, though, he's going to be to playing the point guard position, and he's going to have to go ahead and guard point guards, and I have no problem with him defending point guards, but as far as running an offense, getting people into the flow, being that floor general that we keep talking about, I don't know if he's actually that type of guy. I don't know if he has that in him. To me, he's more of an athletic version of Pat Bev, where he can score a little bit. I don't think he'll ever be a dynamic scorer. I think he can be a glue guy defensively, where he can help shut down guards and stuff like that. But I don't look for anything bigger than that from him. I don't expect that. And because of who his dad is and his names in general, they're going to expect more out of this kid. I just don't think he... But I will say this. His game, the way it's set up, his game is more suited for the NBA more so than it ever was for college. So if he has any chance to be successful, this is the league he's going to be successful in. So.
I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that we would not be discussing him if he were not the son of LeBron James. I mean, I think that much is clear.
Yeah.
We're talking about a guy that didn't play a full season of freshman ball at USC, came off the bench, I think. Did he come off the bench for them? I think he did. Don't quote me on that, but the point is that he didn't play a lot. That's the point.
Right.
And he averaged under 5 points a game, shot 27% on threes. Although he did shoot well, I think in the combine, he shot really well from three. But
yes, he
shot
did.
27% from three for the season. He's undersized. He's not a great shooter, and at least not statistically during the actual games. And he's not a great playmaker. He's not a natural point guard or anything like that. So, like you said, he's kind of a poor man's Tony Allen type or something like that. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's a Davion Mitchell type at best. I think he's a smart player from what I've seen and read and watched, but he's a good athlete, but he's not an off the charts athlete like his pops either. So it's, you know, he's going to get a break because of who his dad is, which, by the way, I have no issue with, but will he be able to capitalize on that? I think he might be able to carve out a decent, you know, roll on the back end of somebody's bench, but it's hard to envision much more than that from Bronny James.
I agree.
But you know, the question becomes, would you draft him though? Just, you know, especially if you're not the Lakers, would you draft him just and hold him hostage or something. I don't know, or just try to work something out. Who knows? Lastly, before we go, your thoughts on the Cavaliers, the coaching search, and what they should do with the 20th pick. Maybe it's Bronny James. I don't know.
Well, culture wise, I mean, at this point, this is where I don't have a problem with them getting rid of JB Bickerstaff per se. JB has his flaws. I don't think the way that he's the reason why they haven't reached their potential. I think part of the reason why he was fired, in my opinion, is the lack of development in Evan Mobley's offensive game. I think that played a part in the fact that Donovan Mitchell, I don't think, likes him at all either. If you go on wins, losses, and just how they performed in the playoffs, I think that team still played for him. And I don't have a problem with them getting rid of the coach. If they feel that that he is an issue and they want to get rid of him, that's fine. But they need to have a plan on who they want to replace him with. And I'm not necessarily sold on the fact that they really had a plan. Because right now we're almost to the draft and they still don't have a coach. Although I think it's going to be Borrego. James Borrego is going to be the coach, which I'm, you know, neither here nor there about. I'm not going to not doing backflips over. I'm not going to cry, you know, over spilled milk about him. I'm just hoping that, you know, if you're going to get rid of JB, you have a guy to replace him. And that guy that you replace him is the right guy. As far as what to do in the draft, if you notice from last year when we did the mock draft, I said the need for the Cavs were wing shooters and bench help. We go into this offseason, and in my opinion, the Cavs need wing shooters and bench help. I don't think whatever they decided to do last year, I don't think they filled those two needs, and I think it's still a problem. For whoever, Kobe Altman, as always, I've had disdain for this guy from day one, but I really have disdain for him for whatever reason why Dean Wade happens to take up a roster spot and they're spending a whole bunch of money on this guy. I have no idea, because as far as bench help, they need bench help at the power forward spot because they envisioned Dean Wade to be that person that they once had Kevin Love in that spot. And they felt that Dean Wade was a better version of Kevin Love at this point in his career. And that's why they got rid of Love. My thing is, I don't think Dean Wade is that good. I don't think he had a couple games and all of a sudden, you know, they was throwing ticket tape parades for this guy. I'm not a fan of him, and I think if they're going to help with, you know, get bench help, they're going to need bench help at the wing position and they're going to need bench help at the power forward position in general, in particular. Guys I have in mind, I have six guys I have listed in that wing position.
Oh,
that
quickly.
Should Same be available, available at 20. So I got Cam Christie, the shooting guard from Minnesota. I have Keyshawn George, the small forward from Miami. Tristan Da Silva, the small forward from Colorado. Ryan Dunn, the small forward from Virginia, Tyler Smith from G League Ignite, and Darren Holmes, the power forward from right down the road here in Dayton, Ohio, at the University of Dayton. Those are guys I think who can come in and contribute to this team right away. If I'm the Cavs, I'll be looking at one of those guys.
Well, we'll see if one of them end up getting picked on Wednesday night. I will say, in defense of Dean Wade, quickly, I will say that the analytic nerds really liked him. I mean, like, there's some defensive numbers. There's some defensive numbers, like some defensive analytic numbers that suggest that Dean Wade was extremely valuable for the Cavaliers. Like, he was literally one of the better defenders in the NBA, believe it or not.
And yeah, my son likes him, too.
And the fact that he can hit threes, I mean,
yeah,
when he's playing well, I mean, the Cavs were looking good when he was out there. He just got hurt and missed much of the year this year. And so that was kind of problematic, of course. I'd be fine with James Borrego, for the record, or Kenny Atkinson, who are the two kind of leaders in the clubhouse for the Cavs job. I'd be okay with either of them.
Right.
I'd probably slightly prefer Borrego better, but I'd be fine with either. And I also would am okay with the fact that they got rid of JB. I don't think I would have gotten rid of JB just yet, except for the fact that it appears, like you said, that Donovan Mitchell does not like him. And, you know, if you, anybody listens to Brian Windhorst, who's is connected to the Cavs, does anybody talk about the Cavs coaching search? He's basically indicated in any way possible without actually coming out and saying that Donovan Mitchell did not like JB and wanted him fired. He's saying that Donovan Mitchell didn't want JB and wanted him gone. I mean, that's so, you know, and if their goal is to re-sign Donovan for a long term, JB's time with the Cavaliers was not so good that it meant that he was immune from getting terminated if the star player was not on board. So I can understand that as well. So, you know, give me a wing that can shoot. That's at least 6'8", somewhere between 6'8" and 6'10". Mm-hmm. That's a fluid shooter and a decent athlete, decent defender. And give me James Borrego or Kenny Atkinson and let's run it back. I would be okay if they would have tried to move Darius Garland or Jared Allen, but from all indications, Kobe Altman, they're not looking to do that right now. And when you look at how the Celtics kind of bonded together and failed together and overcame together, you can see why maybe they feel that keeping that core nucleus together is the right way to go. But it's never going to reach its pinnacle if FMO League doesn't become a consistent outside shooter. As long as Jared Allen stays there, it feels like they would have to get rid of Allen and put Mobley at the five and get a legit comfortable stretch four in there, or, you know, something. Or Evan Mobley's going to have to really get comfortable shooting threes, one or the other. So yeah, we'll leave it there. So thank you, Mark Hicks. The Mark Draft is always it's a lot of work. It's a lot of research. It's a lot of content that we put out there. It's a lengthier podcast than some of our other ones. And so we appreciate everybody for listening and sticking to the end. Mark, we appreciate you. And we'll see you back in April for the NFL Draft, hopefully sooner.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Yep, no doubt. Jay Hicks signing off the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We out here. Peace.